This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. A first-of-its-kind civil trial against drug maker Johnson & Johnson is underway here in the U.S. The state of Oklahoma is suing the company over its alleged role in the U.S. opioid epidemic. Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter said the company was motivated by greed.
In their zeal to provide a magic drug, they ignored centuries of experience, well-documented scientific histories of deadly addiction epidemics, and embarked on a cynical, deceitful, multi-million-dollar brainwashing campaign to establish opioid analgesics as the magic drug.
The lawsuit, which aims to hold opioid manufacturers responsible for the drug crisis gripping the country, could have a large impact on other states seeking similar compensation. Tornadoes continued to cause destruction across the U.S. Tuesday evening. A twister hit the Kansas City, Kansas area, leaving at least 12 people injured, damaging homes, scattering debris at the airport. In the states of Ohio and Indiana, tornadoes killed at least one person and injured more than 130 others and destroyed homes, schools, and businesses. In Ohio, at the Harrison Township, Fire Chief Mark Lynch says first responders were still trying to account for everyone on Tuesday.
Searching building to building. We've already done a complete primary search since last night, and we're looking to do the secondary search right now. We're hoping to wind that up by the end of the day.
The National Weather Service said severe weather continued to threaten some 60 million Americans Tuesday from Texas to New York. And the founder of the Smithsonian Institution's newest museum, which focuses on African American history, will now lead the institution's entire system of museums and parks. The Smithsonian Board of Regents appointed Lonnie Bunch as the 14th secretary, becoming the first African American to lead the organization in its 173-year history. This is VOA News. The next U.S. presidential election is more than a year away, and President Trump already has his sights on a potential Democratic rival. Trump spoke about former Vice President Joe Biden during his recent trip to Japan.
In Japan yesterday, the president sided with North Korea's assessment of Biden.
Kim Jong-un made a statement that Joe Biden is a low IQ individual. He probably is, based on his record. I think I agree with him on that.
Biden's campaign says it waited until today to respond out of respect for Memorial Day. Deputy campaign manager Kate Bedingfield says the president's attacks are beneath the dignity of the office, adding that to be on foreign soil on Memorial Day and side with a murderous dictator against a fellow American and a former vice president speaks for itself. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
The U.S. Transportation Security Administration is changing its policy on airline passengers carrying cannabis products on flights. The AP's Mike Gracia reports.
The Transportation Security Administration has made a change to its cannabis policy, allowing passengers to travel with some forms of CBD oil and hemp derivatives. In updating the What Can I Bring guidance, the TSA says it was recently made aware that the FDA legalized a drug called Epidiolex last June. Epidiolex is used to treat epilepsy in children. TSA rules still ban CBD oils that have THC, the chemical that produces the high found in marijuana. Also still banned are cannabis-infused products that are still illegal under federal law. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The Taliban and Russia have jointly called for the withdrawal of U.S.-led coalition troops from Afghanistan. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the only way to settle the Afghan conflict is through diplomacy and politics, not with foreign military presence. The remarks came Tuesday in Moscow at a gathering of Russian and Afghan security personnel and Afghan political representatives. The U.S. military said Tuesday that a total of six American troops have been identified so far from 55 boxes of human remains that North Korea turned over last year. President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signed an agreement allowing for the recovery of remains of U.S. soldiers from the Korean War in the early 1950s. Military officials say about 5,300 American troops are believed lost in what is now known as North Korea. For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or on our VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi President Peter Mutharika takes the oath of office following his re-election.
I also want to thank leaders of various political parties who competed with me in this election. But there cannot be one winner at a time. So it's now the time to move on. The election is over.
Rwanda sentences a terror suspect to 30 days in prison pending his trial. A former Sudan rebel leader returns home to Sudan, but says he's been told by the military junta to leave. Ghana aims to identify vulnerable population in its first digital census. And Uganda seeks nearly $1 billion for refugee support amid demand for accountability.
We're accountable to refugees to deliver services meeting their rights and their needs, but we're obviously also accountable to donors to ensure that funding is value for money and is used in the right way.
Hans Hasselman is the senior field coordinator for the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda. And this morning, a discussion with the artist who made a hit video on corruption in Liberia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi President Peter Mutharika was sworn in on Tuesday for his second five-year term after defeating six other candidates in a tightly contested presidential election. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
There was jubilation and ululation from hundreds of people who trooped to Kamuzu Stadium in Blantyre to witness Mutharika and his vice president, Everton Chimulilenchi, taking the oath from Chief Justice Andrew Nyilenda.
I, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, do solemnly swear, that I will well and truly perform, the functions of the High Office of President,
Mutharika, the leader of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, narrowly won the May 21st presidential election. The incumbent leader got 38.7%, while his opponent, Lazarus Chakwera, leader of opposition Malawi Congress Party, trailed with 35.41%. Vice President Saulos Chilima of the opposition United Transformation Movement Party came third with 20.24%. In his short acceptance speech, Mutharika asked political leaders who contested the May elections to move forward.
I also want to thank leaders of various political parties who competed with me in this election. Most will accept that there cannot be one winner at a time. So it's now the time to move on. The election is over. There is a time to fight. There is a time to unite.
A local radio station reported Tuesday that police dispersed Malawi Congress Party supporters who protested the official results. However, the party, which originally demanded a recount, has no further plans to challenge the vote tally. The leader of the United Democratic Front, Atupele Muluzi, finished fourth in the presidential race. Muluzi told state media Tuesday that he is looking forward to Mutharika's leadership in the next 5 years.
I hope that his government will be able to continue to make sure that he stabilizes the economy and provide quick wins, especially jobs for young people, as well as you reunify our beautiful country following such a challenging election period.
Some Mutharika supporters say although the president has performed well in the past 5 years, they expect even more. Jane Chiwamba is one of the Mutharika supporters. She says she would like to see more rural technical colleges, which Mutharika administration started establishing in rural areas, because these, she says, will help empower youth to be self-reliant citizens. The official inauguration ceremony for Mutharika is scheduled for Friday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The Ugandan government and the UN High Commissioner for Refugees are calling on the donor community to give $927 million in support of over 1.2 million refugees living in Uganda. But the appeal is complicated by the alleged misuse of previous contributions. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Located next to several countries in conflict, Uganda has become host to huge refugee populations. Currently, there are 792,000 South Sudanese, 417,000 Congolese, and more than 35,000 Burundians, among others. The $927 million US sought would pay for water, sanitation, food, healthcare, shelter, and other basic needs for the refugees. Hens Hesseman is the senior field coordinator for the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda.
Uganda is Africa's largest refugee situation with over 1.2 million refugees, and the number is growing with continued influxes to the country. And over 100 partners, UN and NGO partners, have been supporting the Uganda government in managing this humanitarian situation and deliver life-saving services. That needs to continue.
However, the appeal is weighed down by what donors are calling unsatisfactory investigations over abuse of funds. In early 2018, four Ugandan officials under the office of the Prime Minister were asked to leave their positions pending investigations into alleged abuse of funds, fraud, and exaggeration of refugee numbers. Uganda's Junior Minister for Refugees, Muse Cheru, says the probes are still ongoing.
We are saying the investigation is systematic and thorough. Those gentlemen and ladies will not step in these offices until they are either cleared or brought to book if they are found to have committed a crime.
He also accuses Uganda's development partners of misusing donor funds.
The partners have also had a challenge. You overcost your administrative response. The money that the international community gives, 3/4 of the money goes to manage your welfare. You drive big cars, you sleep in big hotels.
Hesseman declined to comment on Echeru's remarks. He says the UNHCR has been working with the government to verify actual refugee numbers using a biometric system that the agency named Progress. He said the system will reduce fraud and corruption.
Priority of all the partners is accountability. We're accountable to refugees to deliver services meeting their rights and their needs, but we're obviously also accountable to donors to ensure that funding is value for money and is used in the right way.
The appeal follows critical remarks from German Ambassador Albert Konze, who said Germany has re-established financial dealings with the UNHCR, but will not dispense half of the $52 million it had pledged until the Ugandan government limits corruption. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
The deputy chairman of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, or SPLM North, says the military junta in Khartoum has asked him to leave the country. Yasser Amman returned to Khartoum on Saturday after more than 20 years in exile. He says he's back to help in finding a solution to the stalemate on who should lead the transitional government of Sudan following the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. Amman tells Viewers South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza that Sudan is his country and he has no other place to call home.
We came to be part of the political process after the revolution.
The leaders of the Transitional Military Council have declared you as unwanted guest in Sudan. How do you feel about that?
That is unfortunate because I spent 32 years in the armed struggle. We need a strategic exit to the political life to transform our movement into a national democratic political movement. Unfortunately, this voice for peace and for political settlement is not being heard by the military council. We need this new development in Sudan to take us into a comprehensive peaceful settlement.
You've been out of Sudan for almost 20 plus years. How was your reception when you landed at Khartoum International Airport?
Hundreds of thousands of youths celebrated my presence. Maybe others feel threatened, but not the peoples of Sudan, who are looking for peace, democracy, social justice, and equal citizenship. Those are the people to whom I came, but the military council are asking me to go outside the country. I have no other place to go. I'm going to stay in Sudan, whatever it takes, and I'm ready to sacrifice whatsoever for our people. We have been doing that for many years.
How is your level of engagement with the new leaders in Sudan, the military leaders? Who have you met so far since you landed in Khartoum?
They refused to meet me, but I met all the opposition political leaders of Freedom and Change, the Sudan Call, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, and the National Consensus, all civil societies, women, youth, name them. I interacted with all of them, and our message is very consistent that we need the peace to be part of the agenda of the revolutions, and we need the marginalized people, the IDPs, the refugees, and the prisoners of war to be released, and war should end together with the transformation and democratization of Sudan.
Tell me a little bit about how you came back to Sudan. Who invited you to come back to Sudan?
No, I didn't come at their invitations. If you would remember, announced that the SBNM is sending a delegation of goodwill last April. They refused to welcome this state, and we decided as Sudanese citizens to come through Khartoum Airport. I came and I was admitted into the country. I have no other nationalities. I'm a Sudanese. Now they're asking me to go out. I have no anywhere to go out. I'm from this soil of the Sudan, and I will stick with our people who are aspiring for democracy, equal citizenship, social justice, and for their dignity to be restored after decades of the political Islam tarnishing this society.
That was Yasser Aman, deputy chairman of a faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North. He spoke from Khartoum with John Tanza, managing editor and host of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Today's Wednesday, May 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Rwanda terror suspect Major Calixte Sankara was yesterday remanded to 30 days in prison by a judge pending his trial. Sankara, who is charged with 16 counts related to terrorism, was last week brought before the court to answer to the charges. He pleaded not guilty to all the charges. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
The court's ruling of 30 days of provisional detention supported the prosecution's claim that Major Sankara might escape justice, as he was forcefully extradited to Rwanda, has no known address in the country. The prosecution also expressed the concerns that Major Sankara's release could also complicate the ongoing investigation. The judge dismissed as baseless the argument of Major Sankara's lawyer that he should be provisionally released because he pleaded guilty. Major Calixte Sankara, who is spokesperson of the FLN rebel group, pleaded guilty last week during his initial court appearance. The 16 charges against him include terrorism, murder, kidnap, genocide denial, arson, armed robbery, forgery, and causing bodily harm, among others. The 37-year-old Major Sankara is the man who, since last year, has been declaring in different national media houses that his rebel group was about to overthrow President Kagame's regime through bullets. The FLN, based in the DRC, has carried out terror attacks, mainly in southern Rwanda, and two separate attacks mounted last year left at least 9 people dead. It is not yet known whether Sankara will have to appeal the ruling. However, several critics say many lawyers refused to defend Major Sankara, fearing the eye of the government. But his lawyer, Moise Mundabarashi, told VOA that he's not afraid.
I can't be afraid. I'm a practicing lawyer. I have the right to defend each and everyone. And this is a right that is guaranteed by the Constitution. So I can't really have any problem.
The Sankara case has stabbed another thorn in the already soaring relations between Rwanda, Burundi, and Uganda. Last week in his initial appearance, he said that he worked with some Burundian and Ugandan military officials for financial and diplomatic support. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Ghana is preparing for its first digital population and housing census next year, joining Swaziland, Malawi, and Kenya as one of the first countries in Africa to collect data electronically. The government says tablets and satellite imagery will be used to count every Ghanaian and help fight inequality. Sophia Christensen reports on the census trials in the capital, Accra.
In a cross district of Old Fadama, the largest slum in the capital, a government official interrupts a group of men playing cards. The official carries a tablet.
and asks if anyone has time to test an electronic questionnaire designed ahead of a national population counting exercise in March 2020. Longtime resident Mohamed Basiru volunteers. He was missed out of the headcount during Ghana's last census in 2010 because he was traveling. At that time, census questionnaires were on paper. It took months to gather and assemble the data, and about 3% of the population was left out of the survey. Now the government will be going digital, using tablets and satellite images to improve the reach of enumerators and make sure everyone in Ghana is counted on census night. The census is expected to cost $84 million, which is about 55% more than the last census. The government has contracted some 60,000 enumerators, but is still working with the United Nations on how best to source the 65,000 tablets required to conduct the count. Kenya is benighted as a potential loaner after it completes its first digital census later this year. Araba Forsen is a chief statistician for the Ghana Statistical Service. She says technology will prevent enumerators from understaffing densely populated areas, a problem encountered in 2010 as the population maps they used were out of date.
Satellite imagery will tell us that there are people living in this part of the country that the enumerator may not have visited because probably didn't know that there were people living there.
Ghana's urban population has more than doubled over the past two decades, rising from 7 million in 1997 to almost 16 million in 2017. Many people have moved from poorer rural areas in search of work, joining the millions of street vendors and waste pickers who make up most of Ghana's informal economy. Together with the homeless, they are the floating population government statisticians want to capture better in their database. And the stakes are higher this time, as the census will play a key part in the nationwide rollout of biometric ID cards launched by the president in 2017. The new Ghana card requires a digital address code, many of which will be generated by enumerators during the census. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Accra.
Who stole the money from the bank? Who stole the money from the central bank? It's my money, poor people money, the money that is taken for another.
As Liberia braces for a major nationwide anti-government and anti-corruption protest on June 7th, a new hit music video entitled Who Stole the Money, a reference to the millions of dollars allegedly missing from the Central Bank of Liberia, is topping the playlist in Liberia. The artist is Rabi Nasrallah. Organizers of the June 7th protest, dubbed Save the State, say they want President George Weah to do something about what they say is Liberia's worsening economic situation and corruption. Musician Rabi Nasrallah joins us now from Monrovia. Good morning, Rabi, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored for the opportunity you have granted me.
So, Rabi, tell us, what is behind your latest hit song, Who Stole the Money? Why did you make it?
You know, as an artist and a songwriter, it is my bounden duty to speak against ills in society. I wrote the song after the government constituted investigative teams to prop into the missing money saga. But they couldn't come up with any conclusive findings, you know, as to who the real culprits were or are. This, I believe, has forced me, this idea of course, a high economic shift in Liberia, seeing around my environment, seeing people suffering, seeing people complaining about things that is not what it was. So it has inspired me to speak against all these things in our society.
Rabi, in your song, you keep talking about who stole the money from the central bank. So is it just about the money stolen from the central bank or corruption in general?
It's like corruption in general, including the money that is stolen from the central bank. Because if the money is stolen from the central bank, that's a very huge corruption sitting for the country cover. That's a very huge corruption, and that would eventually lead to exactly what I just listed, especially the hiking in prices, such as transportation that have increased by 50%. Price of bank of rice have increased from 1,500 to 2,005. People get turned away from hospitals due to the lack of fuel and medical supplies. And bag of water that was sold for $5 is now being sold for $10. Labor day, can you imagine? The civil servants are not even taking pay on time. Gasoline prices are continuing to increase from $3.50 to like $600. Electricity is unstable. So these things have inspired me as an anti-corruption ambassador, working for both Transparency International, JMARC, and pushing corruption all around the world. It is my bounden duty to speak against this in my society, especially in Liberia where I live.
As you know, there is a protest being planned in June 7th to be specific. And part of the reasons for the protest is corruption in Liberia. Now, are you not concerned that you will be viewed here as anti-government?
The government should be wise enough to understand the fact that I won't anchor them because I'm an activist. I speak against corruption. The protest is a constitutional right of the people. If the people know that this is going bad with them, they have the right to come up and speak. And first of all, in my song, if you listen to it clearly, you understand that no one in the song was indicted. I said, who stole the money from the central bank? Even the government wants to know who stole the money from the central bank. That what they put up an investigative team, all right? So the government shouldn't think negative about me. I'm just looking at the truth and speaking the reality of what is going on in my country and my surroundings.
Robbie, we're so happy to have you on Daybreak Africa, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and I'm very honored. It's a pleasure. One love and big respect.
Ravi Nasrallah is the artist who made the hit music video Who Stole the Money from the Central Bank of Liberia. You're speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia.
Liberian people, money is the money from the central bank, the central bank. We ask again, who stole the money from the bank? Who stole the money from the central bank? It's my money, for people money, the money that is taken for another reason. I say, who stole the money? It is all our money. The poor people, money is the money from the central bank. They cut out the roots, step on the truth, don't want the tree to bear fruit. They put a device, scatter the lies and pollute the ghetto youth. Bankrupt economy, shut down companies, make the people lose jobs. And none of this, my father, no make my bread, this don't show no love. My papa beg for bread, mama cry for help. Politicians on the mission for corruption, they just don't care. We'll have to change the system, my people are the victims. 60 billion get missing, my youth without no evidence. So tell us, where did the money go? And how did the money
flow? And how did the money flow?
Someone must be held accountable.
You know, someone must be held.
We need some investigation on this. Who stole the money from the bank?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yo.
Who stole the money from the central bank?
Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's my money.
My money.
For people money.
For people money.
The money that is taken for another reason. I say, who stole the money? The money from the central bank, the central bank. We are again. Who stole the money from the bank?
Who ya guy?
Who stole the money from the central bank?
It's my money,
my money.
For people money,
for people money.
The money that is taken for another reason.
I say, who stole the money? Houses with corrupt connections. No transparency for corruption. No justice, no prosecution.
Ravi Nasrallah with his latest hit music video, Who Stole the Money from the Central Bank of Liberia. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thank you.